authorities foil the attempted smuggling of 7,000 tons of sugar from Thailand. Japan sets a new record for fresh COVID cases. Philippine teachers asking for COVID hazard pay as students return to face-to-face classes. And a U.S. congressional delegation visits detained former Senator Laila De Lima after getting court approval. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with an update on the crackdown against smuggled sugar. Philippine authorities seized 7,000 more tons of smuggled sugar in a Subic port. It was intercepted on a cargo vessel from Thailand. That's on top of the 44,000 sacks of sugar worth 220 million pesos that were also seized in Bulacan Thursday. Customs authorities claim the warehouse owner admitted to hoarding the sugar, but in an interview with ABS-CBN News, he insisted he did not violate any law.
Pinapasok ko sila kasi wala naman akong tinatagong imported. Inspect, wala naman nakitang imported. Tapos, pinadlock nila yung bodega. Gayong nakikiusap naman ako sa kanila na may mga truck na kasi na may loaded na for delivery na. Hinold nila yun.
A similar raid in San Fernando, Pampanga also yielded around 200 bags of suspected smuggled sugar. The palace said these raids should serve as a warning to sugar hoarders who want to profit from an artificial shortage.
Nagsagawa ng exercise of visitorial powers ang ating Bureau of Customs tungo sa orders ni Executive Secretary Vic Rodriguez, tungo rin sa direktiba ng ating Pangulo na i-check ang mga warehouses para sa mga smuggled or hoarded na asukal.
Philippine agriculture officials draft a proposal to import 150,000 metric tons of sugar. This was revealed by Malacañang following a Wednesday meeting between stakeholders and concurrent agriculture chief President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Senate President Juan Miguel Zubiri, who attended the meeting, said farmers and sugar workers also asked Marcos to allow industrial users to directly import sugar.
Ang suggestion namin kay Presidente, para wala ng tongpats, just give the import order sa mga end users. Yung talagang gagamit ng asukal para wala na, hindi na po sila dadaan ng kamay ng government agents.
Sugarcane farmers in Tarlac appealing for government assistance as the sector continues to deal with high fuel and fertilizer costs. Let's hear more from Vivian Gulia.
The sugarcane crops in Imelda Galutan's farm in Victoria, Tarlac have thinner stalks and fewer shoots, which means lesser sugar output when milled. Imelda attributes this to the reduced fertilizer she used after its price tripled in just a span of 1 year. The surge in fuel prices also forced them to cut back on weeding.
Wala akong budget na kasi mahal lang bayad eh. Kaya imbis na tatlong beses, dalawang beses na lang.
Another sugarcane grower, Danilo Fabros, expects less output this coming harvest season in November.
Tirati po ito, kalahati hektare ay nainihan ko ito ng 40 tons eh. Pero ngayon ito, masurti na kung may 12 tons ito.
In the first quarter of the year, he and Imelda received around 1,800 pesos per sack of sugar, slightly higher than the 1,500 pesos per sack they received last year. But Imelda says this increase is barely enough to cover the surge in fertilizer and fuel prices.
Yun pong mga bumili, yun po ang kumita. Kasi sa amin, binili nila ng mura, di siyempre in-stock nila yun, silang kumita. Hindi namin naranasan na nagtatanim ng tubo na kumita kami ng malaki.
This has prompted some sugarcane growers to shift to rice or corn farming.
Instead of 26 barangays na nagtatanim ng sugarcane, 13 barangays na lang. And then yung iba nga, hindi na hektarya eh. May 0.6 lang, ang baba.
Sugarcane farmers appeal to the national government for assistance.
Wala naman silang tinutulong sa tubo. Sa palay, mayroon mga subsidy nila. Pero sa tubahan, hindi sila nagsusubsidy. Kahit man lang fertilizer sana, wala.
The local government of Victoria, meanwhile, plans to meet with leaders of farmer cooperatives to determine ways to re-energize sugarcane production in the municipality. Vivian Gulia, ABS-CBN News.
Another record high number of COVID cases in Japan. It reported over 255,000 new infections Thursday, eclipsing the previous record of 250,000 reported on August 10th. The surge in cases now straining the healthcare system in many prefectures. The hospital occupancy rate in Okinawa Island has exceeded 100%. The number of infections is expected to increase further, with thousands traveling across the country for the summer holidays. The World Health Organization reporting a significant decline in global sequencing of COVID cases. It says the number of sequences shared per week has fallen by 90% since the start of the year. The world body also noted an increase in COVID deaths over the past 4 weeks. The WHO cautioning countries to avoid complacency in the fight against COVID-19.
The number of sequences shared per week has fallen by 90% since the beginning of this year. And the number of countries sharing sequences has dropped by 75%, making it so much harder to understand how the virus might be changing. 15,000 deaths a week is completely unacceptable. When we have all the tools to prevent infections and save lives, we're all tired of this virus and tired of the pandemic. But the virus is not tired of us.
Here at home, health officials logged 229 deaths. That's from August 8 to 14. But they note almost half of the deaths occurred in July. Meanwhile, independent research group Okta has observed a downward trend in COVID-19 cases in the national capital region. But it reiterates the NCR is still at moderate risk. Back here at home, more members of the Senate test positive for COVID. Senators J.V. Ejercito and Nancy Binay confirmed they contracted the virus. Binay says she is now undergoing home isolation, while Ejercito says he is not experiencing any COVID symptoms. Five other members of the upper chamber earlier disclosed they had tested positive for the virus. They're Senators Joel Villanueva, Grace Poe, Alan Peter Cayetano, Amy Marcos, and Cynthia Villar. Senate President Juan Miguel Zubiri has placed the Senate building under total lockdown for the cleaning and disinfection of all offices. He says Senate sessions will resume Tuesday, that's August 23rd. The Education Department says 27 million students have so far enrolled for the new school year. That's 96% of the agency's target. As for the mode of learning, about 90% of schools nationwide will have an in-person aspect when classes reopen on Monday, August 22. DepEd spokesperson, attorney Michael Poa, assures parents health measures are in place to keep learners safe from COVID-19.
Out of 1,945,000, meron po tayong 921,925 teaching and non-teaching personnel na bakunado na. Meron na pong second dose. So that makes up for 92.11% of our teaching and non-teaching staff. We have downloaded 3.7 billion nationwide as a supplemental MOOE for the schools. Ito po ay para masigurado na kumpleto sila sa mga kagamitan, especially for the minimum health and safety standards to be observed, tulad ng mga alcohol. We are also requiring our schools na meron tayong stock ng mga face mask. At tumutulong naman po yung LGU dyan sa pagsusupply rin sa ating mga schools ng mga face mask.
Preparations are now in full swing for the opening of classes on Monday. In Manila, around 285,000 students in public schools and 105,000 in private schools are expected to go back to classrooms on August 22nd.
Number one po, ang department or DCS po, or Division of City Schools of Manila, ayan nag-conduct na po ng census kung ano po mga schools namin ang pwedeng mag-implement ng full face-to-face come August 22, and we found out that 37 out of 107 schools can conduct full face-to-face classes na po. So the rest, blended learning pa rin. We found out that 6 schools can accommodate one shift only, while the rest of the 101 schools will still have 2 shifts.
Meanwhile, San Juan Mayor Francis Zamora says all public schools in the city will return to full face-to-face classes come Monday. He adds San Juan has enough classrooms to accommodate all students.
We have 13 public schools, all of which have enough classrooms. And during the 2-year hiatus, when there was no physical classes, what we did was build new public school buildings. We built about 6 new buildings. Some were renovated, some were newly built, and we have enough classrooms. Even our teachers are more than enough. So we don't really expect any issues by Monday.
Well, teachers are more than ready for the resumption of limited face-to-face classes, but the education department is not. That's the observation of the group Action and Solidarity for the Empowerment of Teachers, or ACERT, on top of their concerns of protection of teachers from COVID. The group says they are being asked to sign waivers stating the DepEd has no liabilities even if they contract the virus. They're now appealing for a COVID hazard pay.
Kami po sa hanay ng kaguruan ay handang-handa na po. Ang hindi po handa ay ang DepEd. Sa totoo lang po, hindi po handa ang DepEd sa pasukang ito. Kung meron kami hinihingi sa ating IBP Sara na hazard pay, COVID hazard pay po ang nilalaban po natin dyan na maibigay sa mga teacher bilang karampantang punas para po sa ating mga teacher na may infect ng virus. Pinagpapasa po kami ng mga dokumento. Sana nga lang po, hindi lang yun puro dokumento. Bigyan din nila ng aksyon.
Now, will the opening of the new school year and the return of face-to-face classes lead to an uptick in COVID cases? Joining us now is Dr. Guido David of the Okta Research Group. Dr. David, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today and welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. Good noon, Carmina. Thank you for inviting me.
All right, so let's first look at the trend. How would you describe the trend that we're seeing right now based on all the numbers that we've seen the past few weeks?
Well, we initially projected, Carmina, a mini surge or a weak surge, and it is what we have seen. The number of cases did not exceed 5,000. And so far, we believe that we have reached the peak, and cases are already subsiding in many parts of the country, but not everywhere, because there are still areas which are still seeing an increase in cases, for example, Zamboanga City and Davao City, to name a few. But a lot of the regions that we're looking at, for example, NCR, Iloilo, even Cebu, Calabarzon, they're already seeing a decrease in cases. Actually, we are seeing a decrease in cases.
Will this hold, though, once classes resume come Monday?
Well, that's a good question, Carmina. We cannot be certain of anything at this point. Why do we say that? Because in other countries like the UK, when they reopened classes, they did see an uptick in cases. Of course, mostly pediatric cases. Now, they're probably not seeing an uptick anymore because most of their children, their students already have antibodies through exposure or through vaccination. Right now, we don't know the extent of, you know, the antibody levels of school children and students. So, you know, to be on the cautious side, we tend to expect that there will be an increase in cases. It could be clustered or it could be, you know, outbreaks in some regions. But we are expecting increase in cases. They might not, some of them might not be reported because a lot of people are not testing and a lot of people are using antigen testing, which is not included in the official count.
Yeah, based on the boosted status, the status of those who have been boosted, Dr. David, when you look at those numbers and you factor in the opening of classes, which age group do you think would be more prone to an infection or two infections once classes resume?
Well, definitely, Carmina, unvaccinated for whatever age group are the most prone. And we're seeing that from the data. And anecdotally, I'm hearing that from doctors that a lot of the cases, the severe cases that they have, are unvaccinated, well, usually adults. Now, the children will not likely be, in terms of the just the numbers, most of them will be mild and asymptomatic. But, you know, there will still be a number of them who might get severe COVID. And, of course, when we're dealing with children, you know, parents can't help but be cautious about them. And some parents may be more protective. And if their children catch COVID, they might end up bringing them to hospitals, even though their cases are not severe. And that may end up, filling up, well, not really filling up hospitals. We don't expect that. But there will be an increase in the number of hospital cases, even though a lot of them may tend to be on the milder side. So we think there will be an uptick in cases for the, you know, children and maybe high school age. Most of them will be mild and asymptomatic. Those who are, you know, who have not received their booster shots, they will still probably could still get COVID because the Omicron variants, sub-variants, have high breakthrough rates. So even if we're vaccinated, we may have gotten COVID before, we can still be susceptible.
Yeah. So having said that, Dr. David, based on your, do you have any projections as to how many households may face disruption because of positive COVID cases once classes resume come Monday?
Well, having the recent wave of the sub-variant BA5, BA4, BA2.12.1, maybe even 2.75, may have helped increase our natural immunity once again, because usually shortly after a wave, it's probably not, you're not going to see a lot of infections, but this may change as time goes by, you know. So we might not see it initially, like, you know, we might not see it this August or September, but it's possible we could be seeing it after a few months when the immunity starts to wane again, because we have a low booster coverage. And we know that only about 15 million Filipinos have boosters. And this is actually affecting our wall of immunity. And this is one of the reasons possibly why the wave that we have so far has already been prolonged. Mm-hmm. We initially projected it would last only until July, just like in South Africa. But it's actually August, and we're expecting it to last until September.
So what could be the possible, what could be the projection here? Will cases go up? You said a while ago that we may have reached the peak coming from the weak surge that we just got, but will this be the base in terms of numbers, and we can only see numbers go high after the opening of classes?
Generally, we're expecting cases to subside over the next possibly week or so.
Okay.
But there might there's a chance that it will go back up again, and it's difficult to project right now because we don't know the extent of our natural or our wall of immunity. But there is a chance, of course, that cases could there could be an uptick. Now, there's also a possibility that we might not see that, especially given the low testing. And that's what I mentioned earlier, that we don't have the same visibility because the level of testing that we have right now, we're probably seeing, we already have, one third or rather, we're only testing about one third of what we were testing last year. So that's 67% reduction in testing already in 1 year in RT-PCR testing. So that makes it more difficult to have visibility. But yeah, like we mentioned, the projections are not easy right now, but there's a chance that we could see an uptick. But there's also a chance that, you know, it could continue downwards, or we might not have the visibility of the cases.
Are you concerned, Dr. David, of further mutations because of the amount of people that will be out and about and congregating in schools and all that?
Of course, Carmina, we're always concerned about the further mutations. But
you know, so far the Philippines has not been a major contributor to mutations, possibly because, you know, we're still generally following health protocols. But, you know, the mutations are usually coming from other countries. And this is something we cannot control, because as more countries move towards the endemic, you know, easing the mask mandates, or, you know, not having any more restrictions, and there are countries which are like that, they're treating this just as a flu, mutations will keep coming. And so far, the mutations are all Omicron subvariants. And that's been, you know, that's less of a concern, because Omicron is not severe for most people. But we cannot guarantee that there will be no mutation in the future which will, which is not severe. What I'm saying is that, you know, there's always a chance that the virus will mutate into something more severe than what we're seeing right now. And then, you know, if that's the case, it could be back to the drawing board for most of us.
You know what's concerning, Dr. David, and the WHO actually spoke about this, I think it was yesterday. It's the number of deaths that are being reported. Here in the country, we saw a steady rise to what is now, 40 cases almost daily in terms of deaths. What could be the reason behind these deaths? And why is it that despite the tools that we have, you know, we've got our booster shots, we've got our primary series, that we're still reporting deaths, Doctor?
Well, Carmina, we did notice that, you know, from around February till May, we were, or at least the DOH was reporting almost zero deaths. There was a long period of time wherein we had zero deaths. And now we're averaging more or less 40 deaths per day, I think, over the past week or so. And, well, this is primarily due to the increased number of cases, because, as we know, we're in amidst a wave right now. So even though the number of cases is not as high as what we saw in January, we're still seeing an increased number of deaths, because some severe cases will still lead to deaths. And that's why we reiterate, yes, we are moving forward. We're trying to live with the virus. But there will be sectors of the population which will always be vulnerable. This includes seniors, those with comorbidities, and those who are unvaccinated, or, you know, they don't have immunity. And that's a concern, because, you know, the rest of the population, which is not very vulnerable, can, you know, move forward, especially since right now the economy is very important. But there will still be sectors of the population that we still need to protect. So this is a I mean, of course, we prefer zero deaths, but, you know, we have to also balance it with the economy. And, you know, that's why you know, this has always been a difficult problem. But right now, you know, public health, I wouldn't say it's taking a, I mean, in terms of the, you know, the balance, we're giving more emphasis to the economy because it's important right now. But we should not take for granted that there are still vulnerable sectors of the population that can get severe COVID and who can die if they get severe COVID.
Okay, given the stats regarding the deaths, given that, as he said, after school reopens, you are projecting sort of an uptick after that. The next question is, will our healthcare system be able to handle it? We hear of, I think it was Japan that's having a problem with that now, given the surge that they're experiencing. What about our healthcare utilization rate? Does that remain steady? Will we be able to handle it if another surge happens?
Well, Carmina, the problem with Japan is that their wave right now is very massive. I mean, it's much higher than the scale of what they had in previous waves. And this is the difference with us. Our wave right now is not as massive. I mean, in fact, it's much smaller. So we had probably the worst surge during the Delta surge and the other surge last year. The Omicron wave had a lot of caused a lot of infections, but in terms of severity, it was not as severe. So in Japan, it's a bit not surprising that they're having you know, hospitalization problems because of the sheer volume of cases. We're not expecting a high volume of cases, even with an uptick due to face-to-face classes, especially since most cases will probably be pediatric if there are. Most infections will probably at in that demographic. So, most of them will be mild or asymptomatic. So we're not expecting an increased number of infections or hospitalizations in students. Now, of course, we have to make sure that the teachers and the school officials who work in schools and, you know, families of students, you know, they should have some level of protection so that especially the vulnerable ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're middle-aged, you know, they might get it, but it's probably not going to be severe.
But the disruption, that's going to happen, even if we talk about pediatric cases. I mean, you're going to have parents there and caregivers caring for these sick children. So there is going to be a disruption, or there are going to be disruptions, which may snowball into something else, you think?
Well, disruptions are very possible, Karnamina, if we have a, high number of infections, even if most are, let's say, you know, pediatric, but they transfer it or sort of carry the virus to older members of the household, for instance. So there's definitely possibility for disruption, and we can't avoid that. We can't stay locked down forever, and we have to have, you know, we're one of the countries which still are not implementing face-to-face classes, and so that's going to change. So that's going to be part of the risks that we have to face, and hopefully our systems are in place that will help reduce the disruptions and even the infections if our protocols are followed, or, you know, if we have well-established policies. That will help reduce the number of infections that we can expect. That being said, we will still generally expect an uptick in cases.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Guido David there, research fellow of the Octo Research Group, thanks again for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Take care and keep safe.
Thanks, Carmina. Take care.
Thanks. All right, from there, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, two courts allow a U.S. delegation to visit detained former Senator Laila De Lima. More on that when we come back. Stay with Dateline Philippines. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Authorities foil the attempted smuggling of 7,000 tons of sugar from Thailand. Japan sets a new record for fresh COVID cases. Philippine teachers asking for COVID hazard pay as students return to face-to-face classes. And a U.S. congressional delegation visits detained former Senator Laila De Lima after getting court approval. Back with more news, the Rural Missionaries of the Philippines asks government to unfreeze its bank account so it can continue serving the poor. Members of the church-based group were recently indicted for alleged terrorist financing, but RMP denies this. It also condemns efforts to red tag them, saying such actions put their members at risk.
Masyadong mahirap sa isipin na tayo tumutulong nire-red tag. Mm-hmm. At ang pinutulungan namin ay ang mga magsasaka, yung mga indigenous people, tsaka yung mga nakatira sa malayo. Pero hindi. Ibig sabihin na pag may gumagawa ng pagsisira sa mission namin, mag-stop na tayo. No, tuloy pa rin ang pagtulong sa kapwa. Nandoon ang pangamba. No? Hindi yan nawawala. Pero naniniwala kami na ang Diyos ay nasa amin.
The group says this is not the first time they've been harassed.
We still remember Father Paez. Mm-hmm. He is our RMP member. He was killed. He was shot when he was coming home after accompanying a political prisoner released already. Mm-hmm. Second, we have Sister Patricia Fox, a former national coordinator of the Rural Missionaries of the Philippines. And she has battled, you know, a deportation case. And this was successful, and we know that she has been deported. And that's why we are asking, why does this government really are seemingly putting all its resources at its disposal to shut down an organization of missionaries?
A U.S. congressional delegation has visited detained former Senator Laila De Lima after getting the go signal from two Muntinlupa courts. Mike Navallo now joins us with an update. Mike.
Carmina, a U.S. congressional delegation led by Senator Edward Markey is now at Camp Karame to visit detained former Philippine Senator Laila De Lima after two Muntinlupa courts approved the visit. The U.S. delegation arrived just before noon, shortly after the orders were issued. Markey and U.S. Congressman Alan Lowenthal, John Garamendi, Don Beyer, and Congresswoman Ayoma Radiwagen were barred by the Philippine National Police from visiting De Lima on Thursday due to lack of court approval. The visit is meant to discuss the progress of the remaining cases filed against the former senator, her current situation and experiences in the more than 5.5 years of her continued unjust detention, according to a press release. The motions for the visit were filed Thursday afternoon and were granted Friday today. The prosecution did not object to the visit. No media or social media coverage or audio and video recording were, however, allowed. The visit also has to comply with PNP guidelines on safety and health protocols. De Lima in her motion said Markey had written to the PNP leadership as early as August 9, and she had also sent a letter on August 10 to coordinate the visit, but said the PNP did not act on these letters. Under PNP guidelines, a foreigner should send a letter of intent to the PNP chief 2 weeks before the visit, endorsed by the Department of Foreign Affairs. Markey has been a vocal supporter of De Lima, joining calls for her release and supporting the enforcement of the Magnitsky Act, barring those responsible for De Lima's detention from entering the U.S. We're still waiting for word, Casey, if the visit pushed through, if they were able to talk to former Senator De Lima, and what were the details of those discussions, Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Mike Navallo there joining us this noon. Moving on, Philippine officials expect a significant drop in poverty incidents next year. The National Economic and Development Authority says this can be fulfilled if growth recovery efforts are sustained. NEDA Undersecretary Rosemary De Leon adds the economy should be further reopened to boost the recovery.
Tapos, kailangan din na i-ensure natin yung ating health system capacity. Tapos yun nga, as a matter of policy, patuloy dapat sa pagbubukas. Kaya we thank the DepEd, especially si VP and Education Secretary, na talaga pong inano niya na ibalik na natin yung face-to-face classes. So pangalawa po na intervention natin is dagdagan pa yung investments on human capital, no? Una, para magkaroon ng capabilities nga para makapag maging productive ang bawat isa at maging agile po. So ibig sabihin, kahit anumang crisis, huwag naman na sana, makaya natin.
The number of poor Filipinos in 2021 rose to nearly 20 million. The government hopes to lift up to 9 million Filipinos out of poverty by the end of President Marcos's term. Senator Raffy Tulfo wants more focus on renewable energy in the Philippines. Tulfo says government can achieve this by giving incentives to investors in the sector.
Bakit hindi natin i-develop yung RE libre po yan? At saka siguro po, incentivize yan para yung ating mga local na kapitalista mamuhunan. Sa ngayon po kasi, ayaw nila mamuhunan dyan kasi medyo may kamahalan daw. Siguro magbigay tayo ng mga tax break, tax holiday. Isa pa po, siguro i-liberalize yung foreign investment sa RE, renewable energy.
Tulfo also believes the Philippines should focus on renewable energy over constructing new coal-fired plants.
Meron na po atang moratorium na itigil na po yung pagpapatay ng mga coal power plants. Pero mukhang meron na talagang hindi mapigilan, nag-a-apply pa rin. Dapat talaga itigil na yan. Again, babalik tayo dun sa RE. Yun po dapat talaga dun tayo mag-concentrate. Yeah.
World News Now, Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan throws his support behind Ukraine as he visits Kyiv for the first time since Russia's invasion. Erdogan says Turkey remains firmly on Ukraine's side, vowing to continue diplomatic efforts to end the war. He also expressed alarm about the fighting around Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, warning this could lead to another Chernobyl disaster. UN Chief Antonio Guterres, who is also in Kyiv, called on Russia to withdraw military equipment from the nuclear plant. North Korea rejects South Korea's conditional olive branch. Kim Yo-jong, the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, shut down South Korea's President Yoon Suk-yeol's offer of assistance. President Yoon earlier said if Pyongyang denuclearizes, he would help normalize diplomatic relations between the U.S. and North Korea. But Kim called Yoon childish for thinking he could trade economic cooperation for the North's honor and nuclear weapons. Seoul retaliated, claiming saying Kim's comments were very indecent. North Korea's nuclear weapons program continues. On Wednesday, it fired two cruise missiles, its first launch in 2 months. The man accused of stabbing novelist Salman Rushdie last week in New York pleads not guilty to second-degree attempted murder and assault charges. 24-year-old Hadi Matar is accused of attacking Rushdie on stage. The suspect is being held without bail and will return for another hearing next month. The attack has been decried as an attack on freedom of expression. It came 33 years after Iran's supreme leader issued a religious edict calling on Muslims to assassinate Rushdie over his book titled The Satanic Verses. The book drew outrage among some Muslims who considered its content to be blasphemous. Still ahead, the Philippine Central Bank delivers its fourth consecutive rate hike plus an update on the weather. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back with a check on the weather. Weather Bureau Pagasa is monitoring two weather systems. Let's get an outlook on the weather now from ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas. Ariel.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. Two low-pressure systems are being monitored. The first one over the West Philippine Sea left the Philippine area of responsibility last night and may dissipate within the day. The habagat it pulls will still bring some gusts over the western sections of northern and central Luzon. On the other hand, a new low-pressure area formed east of Luzon early this morning, and at 10 a.m. it was located 1,210 kilometers east of central Luzon. For now, Pagasa says it is less likely to develop into a tropical depression and has no direct effect on the country's weather. It will slowly move over the Philippine Sea this weekend and may approach extreme northern Luzon by Tuesday or Wednesday next week. Cloud clusters will bring rains until this afternoon over Bicol, Eastern Visayas, Bohol, Zamboanga City, Basilan, and Sulu. While intense afternoon thunderstorms will also be expected in Pangasinan, Central Luzon, Calabarzon, Mindoro, Panay, and Negros. Tomorrow, Saturday, Pangasinan, Benguet, Central Luzon, Calabarzon, Camarines Norte, and Mindoro will also experience intense thunderstorms. And on Sunday, the trough or extension of the LPA will bring rains in the afternoon in Quezon and Bicol. By nighttime, Cagayan, Isabela, Romblon, and Visayas will also be rainy. On Monday, it's going to be a wet first day of face-to-face classes in Zambales, Bataan, Mimaropa, Bicol, Western Visayas, and northern Mindanao directly due to the LPA, while thunderstorms should still be expected in the afternoon and evening over the rest of the archipelago. That's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Happy weekend. Stay safe, everyone. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel Rojas there. Back here at the newsroom in business, the Philippine Central Bank delivers its fourth consecutive rate hike in a bid to slow inflation. Here's Warren De Guzman with a full story.
The Philippine Central Bank Monetary Board raised key interest rates by 50 basis points Thursday, the fourth consecutive rate hike this year. Rates have now been raised by a total of 175 basis points this 2022 in a bid to anchor inflation expectations and offset the negative effects of similar rate hikes in the United States on capital flows and foreign exchange rates. Philippine Central Bank Governor Felipe Medalla has been projecting Thursday's rate hike for some time now. He says more hikes may follow due to multiple uncertainties, including the size of the next Fed rate adjustments and global and domestic pressures on inflation. He also says a slowdown in growth is quite likely due to the rate adjustments.
It's impossible for tightening not to reduce
economic growth. However, it's still possible that even with possibly additional measures, respectable growth is still possible. So I think I'll leave it at that. And I wish I could tell you this is the last increase. Whether that respectable growth is lower or within the DBCC target of 6.5% to 7.5% is, of course, important to us. But at the same time, to us, price stability is the primary concern.
Medalla says the slowdown may lead to some job losses as well. While he believes the number of jobs won't go down, underemployment may go up.
What I notice sometimes is when wage and salary employment goes down, oftentimes self-employment and unpaid family work increases. So really, it's not an employment issue, it's a quality of employment issue.
As for inflation, the Philippine Central Bank does not expect it to peak until October or November. It has even raised its forecast for 2022 to 5.4% from 5% due to continued food shortages in the Philippines, primarily fish and sugar. But the central bank stressed these issues must be addressed by non-monetary measures. Economist Michael Ricafort says he will be watching the U.S. Federal Reserve's next rate adjustments for cues on what the Philippine Central Bank will do next. Warren De Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
As central banks around the world hike interest rates from pandemic lows, Turkey continues to go the other way. Its central bank slashed rates by 100 basis points to 13%, even as inflation in the country rose to nearly 80% in July. Turkey says the surprise rate cut is meant to drive economic growth and sustain employment. The lira tumbled to 18 against the dollar after that move. Turkey's central bank governor supports President Tayyip Erdogan's unusual theory that high interest rates cause inflation. Most economists have the opposite view. The U.S. and Taiwan set to restart formal trade talks. This is part of an initiative between Washington and Taipei aimed at forging agreements with economically meaningful outcomes. Talks are scheduled to begin next week. Taiwan's top trade negotiator hopes discussions could lead to a free trade deal. He adds China's alleged economic coercion will also be discussed. Beijing has expressed opposition to the trade initiative. Well, Jollibee Times Square now officially open. It is the first Filipino-owned business that made it to the iconic New York City location. Jollibee officials believe that with the latest feat, they are on track to become one of the top five local brands globally. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And switching gears now, Filipinos in Ontario, Canada, celebrate their culture and music at the first Filipino Summer Festival in the city of Hamilton. Christine Santos has more.
Another city in Ontario held its first Fiesta Extravaganza event this past weekend. The city of Hamilton, which is home to more than 100 waterfalls, is also home to about 10,000 Filipinos. Community leaders were excited with a big celebration, which put a spotlight on Filipino culture and their contributions to the city.
Well, I love Toronto, but not everything has to happen in Toronto, and there are many other very caring, sharing communities across the country that have very many Filipino people living in them.
We have an Independence Day, but we have not had a Filipino festival in Hamilton. And this is my dream, to put at least a legacy for the Filipino to get a festival of our own festival.
The first Filipino that arrived in Hamilton is dated back at the end of October 1961. Those pioneers that came first, they arrived to Hamilton, and there were 12 of them. They were all nurses and female. The very first organization said, hey, let's get together. That was back in 1974.
Hamilton is not only the site of the very first Tim Hortons store, but also the Hamilton Healthcare Sciences, which is the most comprehensive healthcare system in Ontario. Many Filipinos serve at the hospital, like Desi Abugan, who's now a retired nurse and has been recognized for her private career college that has graduated thousands of personal support workers, or PSWs, since 1999.
It was a dream for me to be able to help people, provide a good service for the community. And it grew. I really didn't even dream that it was going to be big. All you have to do is to go to healthcare facilities and most of the stuff that you see with the Filipinos.
One of the distinguished guests is Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Nonato, the first Filipino-Canadian who made it to the unit command at the Canadian Armed Forces. He shared his personal advocacy for Filipino representation in the forces.
If we are the fabric or part of the fabric of Canadian society, then there should be that representation within the Canadian Armed Forces as well. And so when I was a unit commander there at the Royal Regiment of Canada, I tried to do my little bit by introducing Filipino martial arts. So my soldiers were practicing Cali de Leon, and it was kind of nice to see. There's an openness to the Filipino culture.
The community was ecstatic by the event turnout and live performance by Asia's Nightingale Lani Misalucha, courtesy of I Want TFC.
It's very worth it. I mean, finally, we'll have our own, that we can be proud of to say that it is ours.
This is my first time, and I was able to see a lot of our kababayans, and thank you. And, I hope there's going to be more of this.
Canada Fiesta Extravaganza has connected the Filipino communities across Ontario and will be making its final stop in Montreal, Quebec by the end of August. Christine Santos, ABS-CBN News, Hamilton.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.